So we had a community board meeting on Wednesday, and one of the questions in the open forum was about the proposed internal bus service for Raglan. And you did talk about that. I guess my first question, though, would be, is that going to be ready in time for summer?
We're hopeful that it will be ready in time for summer.
Yeah.
They're working on it now, and they were pretty positive about, I think we're very much in agreement with what their thinking is at this stage.
They've been
council, or the consultants working for council.
Yeah, so that's the regional council. You have to, because it's a double council.
Yeah, it's a double council thing. Yeah.
Regional and district.
Yeah, so they seem to be on board with our thinking, and that we have an on-demand service for the trial period.
Yeah,
because effectively we've got a trial period where people can ring up, but we sort of looked at around the school hours also of having sort of, it'll be on demand, but it'll be every day. So say, I don't know what time, that we need to do some work with the school on this, but maybe at 8:15 there's a bus that runs from Greenslade to the school that picks up those that aren't picked up by the bus service at the moment, because I know there's a school bus goes out Wainua Road, for example.
Yeah.
But and it picks up those. So it won't be on demand, but it will be at a fixed time, that one.
Yeah.
So effectively on demand, but it's booked every day.
For that, yeah.
Yeah, for that, and same in the afternoon. We just need to get a feel for numbers, because we're really only looking at one 13-seater bus at the moment, which can carry another four or five standing, I think.
It's kind of a van, really.
Yeah, it's a big van.
Yeah, yeah. And so what about the route?
The routes, well, we've sort of ring-fenced sort of from Upper Wainui out to Greenslade Road. It won't go up Hills Road. Greenslade Road, and basically picking up everything inside that area.
Okay.
So it won't go up to Utawai Road and that sort of thing, but anyone within that area can ring in and say, hey, I'd like to be picked up at 10 o'clock on tomorrow.
Okay.
And that sort of thing.
What about Manu Bay?
No, we're not looking at going that. Oh, Manu Bay?
Yeah.
At the moment, that's sort of in the air. We aren't really looking at that. We're saying the top of Wainui Road, where there's a turnaround area. They could turn around at Manu Bay, but it puts an extra 4 or 5K on the route, probably for not a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we would really want to encourage people to start using it and that sort of thing. So if the demand is and people from out there are ringing up, they won't get turned away, hopefully.
Yeah.
We can make arrangements for that not to happen. But it's to try and encourage those in the sort of the peripheral of the CBD, really, I guess you'd say,
yeah,
to start using the service. Because if people don't use it, then you've got to question whether you continue it after the trial period.
I thought there was mention in the board meeting of the main bus, the 23 bus, extending to Manu Bay. It does it sometimes now? I don't know what it does exactly, but
yeah, I think it does it sometimes, but not every time. So yeah they are keen to extend that so that the 23 bus always goes to Manu Bay, turns around at Manu Bay and comes back.
So that's almost to make up for the smaller bus not getting out there.
Well, it gives people the opportunity to catch that one back into town.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Okay, all right. And so how do we know how many minutes that route would take? Because there was talk about, do we do a half hour, an hourly route or something that fits into that kind of
cycle? Well, the 23 bus will be on just when the 23 bus runs
that one,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one is just on demand, so there's no sort of...
Okay,
no.
So it's kind of like a taxi in a lot of ways.
It's like a taxi.
They'll come to your house?
Yeah, it'll stop out. If you ring up and say you're from X whatever it is, and then it comes to your place. It doesn't go to the road up the road and stop there and say you've got to walk that far, no.
Okay, all right, so that'll be, need to be a lot of publicity about that.
Yeah, we will. We'll have to publicise it well. I guess the reason we went to the on-demand is really to try and find out who's going to use this.
Yeah.
And then longer in the future, whether we stay at on-demand or whether we come up with a fixed route approach will really depend on the demand we get this time.
Okay.
But, you know, it may be that we end up with a fixed route in the future and it does it every half an hour or something like that between the hours of X and Y during the day.
Now, you guys did a survey. Was the survey a little bit inconclusive? People wanted everything? As can happen with surveys?
The survey also, I think there was, I can't remember the numbers, but it was only around that 100 number that replied.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. It was a little bit diverse. So that's why the idea of going to the on-demand was. There's certainly people that are interested in using it.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So we just hope that more and more take it up. The problem is we run into the summer period, more and more of us old fellows tend to walk into town rather than probably catch a bus.
Yeah, it's all dependent on the weather. But some other people want to get out. Actually, it's too hot. They want to get out of the sun. Will the bus be air-conditioned? No one's asked you this
question. Good question. I haven't asked that. No one's asked me. Yeah. The first one.
But if it is, then maybe be really the hot days. That'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More than likely, because most small vehicles these days are air-conditioned.
Yeah, they should be. Yeah. Okay, so we'll just stay tuned and wait for a date. I mean, if you've made all those decisions now between the community board and the regional council, is it just a matter of getting a bus, getting a driver, and getting started? And publicity, I suppose.
I'm not sure what they have to run through, but they will have to obviously go through a process and get it signed off by councils sort of thing. So it'll have to go to council meetings. And then they've got to find a bus. They'll have to go out and find a provider. So it's not necessarily going to go to the local provider.
Because they have a contract with GoBus for most of their stuff, but because this is on demand, they don't have to go with GoBus. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
So could a local company
take it up, yep.
Okay, so that's something for people out there to pay attention to, because that's always worth doing if we can divert the money to a local business rather than
for sure.
Yeah, okay, all right. Spread the word, folks. Moving on to Wienera Walkway, which is, I always feel like I have to explain this because no one ever called it that until this problem arose, but it's the walkway that goes around to the Papahua Bridge from both sides, so it goes around to where the fire station is as well. And we've had a bit of erosion on the old wall there. That walkway is like 100 years old. Now, what exactly, I know there was talk about how big the budget was, what exactly is going to be done around there before it falls into the sea?
Initially, it was just going to be a repair.
So patch up.
Yeah, just patch up and get the lighting working and that sort of thing. But a decision's now been taken then, and steering group has actually obtained additional budget for it.
Yep.
What they're looking to do is deliver a package that sort of future-proofs the work so we don't have to go back there again.
Yeah.
And rather than just simply repair and do reactive maintenance for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So at the moment they're looking at some sort of handrails to go into there. Looking at increasing the width of the current walkway to standards for pedestrian walkway.
Yeah.
Which sort of gets you out to that 1.5 metres to 2 metre widths. I don't know whether it'll go the full 2 metres because that's quite a lot in some areas because it's pretty narrow in a couple of areas.
So it's a sloping wall, so the further they go, it gets exponentially more difficult.
Unless you can pinch some in those places from the bank.
Okay.
So you've got two options. You can make it wider going out to the sea, or you can make it wider going inland. But there's a whole lot of big
trees
that will be sensitive.
Yeah, and that's actually a really nice walkway despite the state of the physical thing that you're walking on. It's actually a lovely spot to walk. So
they'll be also fixing up the wall with whatever, depending on the method that we use to widen it. There is a water main that runs under there that runs over to the camp, so that's going to be upgraded at the same time. And they'll also be upgrading the electrical for additional lighting along there.
I presume that they'll do it in a way where they do one side first so we can still access the bridge from the other side and then vice versa.
Oh, no promises, Aaron, no promises.
That would make sense, right?
Yeah, well, I hope so, because we walk over there probably 2 or 3 times a week, so we'll certainly be looking for access once we get to the end of it. But, I'm sure the project team, which I've got full confidence in, because we're using the same engineer and project manager that we've got on the Wharf project.
Okay.
And since they've been there, things have gone well down there, so, I'm sure they will ensure the public still has full access to and from the camping ground.
Locals are very attached to that little part of Raglan, so...
Yes.
Yeah, it's an important one. Now, speaking of the wharf and things like that, do we have a date on that at all?
No.
Any kind of date? Where's it at? They haven't done even a consent.
No, they're going through the consent. They're going through the consenting at the moment, is my understanding.
Okay.
And that sort of thing, and trying to get that sorted out. They've talked to a contractor, a preferred supplier, and had discussions with them about the various options for the wall and that sort of thing. So they're not looking to go out and have an engineering design done. They'll be working with the contractor to come up with a solution and then implement that solution, which will save us money.
Okay, so a few months probably
would
ultimately be the answer. Speaking of the wharf and the railing there, have you seen these photos pop up on Facebook?
Yes, I've had a look at that, and I've spoken with the project manager, and I will get back to John. I'll send him an email later today.
So, folks, if you haven't seen it, some of the connections and the handrails at the wharf look a little wonky and bolts on funny angles and no nuts on them. And my response, when John pointed this out to me, I said, normally in a contract like this, there's a remedy for this, that the contractor doesn't get paid until everything's shipshape. I presume this is the case.
Yeah, that is the case. There's a list of outstanding defects that they have to go and back and fix up until the engineer signs off, engineer to contract, or the project manager in this case signs off on it. They won't get all their money.
Yeah.
So they are discussing it with them at the moment. The same with the yellow line marking and things like that, which is a thematic sort of marking that they've put down. It's the proper traffic stuff. It's meant to be put down on dry pavement. It was put down on wet pavement. Obviously, it didn't stick. And a few things like that. So, so contractors can be frustrating, but I can assure you that it will be fixed up and it won't cost the ratepayer or council any extra.
Yeah. And I used to literally do this sort of thing. Like, that's why no contracts are like this in the building industry. And this is regular. There's always things at the end where you go, no, we've got to fix that before we pay. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to other issues. Continuing message from the community about fluoride and talk about what's happening at a national level. What does the community board think about the fluoride issue?
Well, the community board, I think we haven't sat down and discussed the pros and cons of it as to what individuals think at this stage.
Yeah.
So we went back to council and asked councils what's going on. Alison came back to me after the meeting on Wednesday.
This is the chief financial officer.
Yes, CFO. Yep. And advised me that at this stage council's not doing anything. It's not fluoriding any water supplies that haven't got fluoride in them at this stage unless they get a letter directing them to do so from the Director General of Health.
Okay. And we've been told that the community organisation against fluoride is taking a court case against the Director General of Health. I don't know the details, but they did say that while that's happening, no one has to act on the government instructions or words to that effect.
I don't know the detail other than what we were told at the meeting and that sort of thing as to what that legal action is.
Okay. All right. Someone from John Street in the community forum was like, stood up, said, John Street residents are against freedom camping on their street. Someone from every street could potentially turn up and say that. But actually, is freedom camping allowed on John Street at the moment?
Well, I think
there was that issue with the grass area, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's a reserve area there that you can't camp on.
You can't camp on, okay.
But the reality is freedom camping, other than one or two areas around Raglan's, is legal everywhere.
In the whole country?
We have to keep
emphasising it's a national legislation
situation
that determines that. But as a council, you guys get to set bylaws restricting it in some areas?
And that's the intent of this bylaw that's out for public submission right now. And I'd certainly encourage people to have their say. From a community board point of view, we did put a pre-submission in, sort of looking at where do we have toilets in Ragland and facilities and saying, well, why not have freedom camping in those areas? So people have got access to toilets. So there's one on Cliff Street, have freedom camping there, but you've got to be moved on by 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Joyce Petrel Memorial Park, same thing there. But again,
but you asked for this, but they didn't put it into the staff, put it into the draft.
I've got to be honest, I haven't read the draft that's out for submission yet. I'll do that over this weekend.
All right, so I can't say that for sure.
Unless you've read it.
No.
Okay.
I don't have time for that, Dennis. That's why I've got you on the show.
Yeah, no. No, I haven't read it at this stage, but I will have, and that's why we, as a community board, will be making a submission on it.
Yeah.
So Kerry's taken that on board, and she will make a submission once she's got feedback from all the community board members. But we'll certainly be pushing those.
And so members of the community might want to talk to her as well.
Well, they are, but I would encourage members of the community to do their own submission. It's not that difficult. You can go online, have a look at it. You can fill the form in online, and even if you just say, I don't want freedom camping in John Street, we'll put it in there.
Yeah.
More voices, the more notice, hopefully, they take.
Yeah.
and that sort of thing. So, yeah, please don't. You're welcome to ring the members of the community board. You're welcome to ring me. But also do your own submission, because the community board at the end of the day is only one voice. Hopefully they do listen to us and they do talk to us.
If they get a flurry of, an unusual flurry of submissions, they do notice that.
Yeah,
I think.
That certainly encourage people. But you know, we're not in a position to say there's no freedom camp in Raglan. We just got to look at where are the best places, and we do have a reasonable number of toilets around the place now, and we just got to encourage people to go and have camp near them and use them.
So when we say freedom camping, and we're talking about allowing it overnight in like Stewart Street, is that anyone in a vehicle?
Well, the national legislation is changed, or is about to change, so that your vehicle has to be certified as fully self-contained.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so
does it really need to be near a toilet?
Well, theoretically, it doesn't have to be, but, you know, if you're near a toilet, then you don't have to use the one in your vehicle.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, so you don't have to unload it as often and things like that. So there are benefits.
Yeah, and it might be full as well. I've been there. Okay, are the community facilities consultation happened just before the community board meeting. I have a complaint. I rushed over from another meeting to get there in the last few minutes, and the staff had already left. They said they were going to be there. The notice said they were going to be there till 1:30. So did you see them? Were they there at all?
They were there.
Oh, well, that's good.
You're talking about Matt and the connectivity strategy.
I don't know.
Yes.
Because they weren't there by the time we got there. It was connectivity and the community facilities.
Oh, it was a community facility. Okay, I picked up the
It wasn't very well advertised. We only discovered it the day before, and we tried to put it out on our social media. But I don't know if they had many people turn up or quite a while.
I did ask them. They had about 15 people come in and chat to them.
Okay, well, that's
But they said it was on a wide range of subjects, not just what they were there for.
Which fluoride, right? Probably talking about fluoride.
I think they got fluoride, but they got all sorts of other things.
Okay. Is the community board going to submit, or have you submitted about community facilities, and what have you said, if you have?
At the moment, we haven't submitted on that, and we'll have a look at that. But that's really around the town hall, the halls. And I
said halls, toilets, sports fields.
Did it cover sports? Okay,
yes, it
covered sports field. I hadn't picked that up.
There's a list of about six things: sports fields, sports pavilions, libraries. Yeah, any
public
thing
that the council owns, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. That the public uses. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we will look at putting a submission in on that.
Okay. Yeah, because that's just take a seat, Nat. Hey, close the door. It's cold out there. Okay, so that's because there's, I guess my
we've got
people,
the right.
People who didn't get to go and talk to the staff, they can make a submission online. I guess that's the key thing we need to put in there.
Yeah, you definitely need to do. Even if you have talked to the staff, you still need to do a submission online.
Yeah. And I actually think this is quite an important one. I was ashamed that we didn't get much time to publicise it, because these are the services that council provide us that we probably pay the most attention to. We notice if the library's not open. We notice if the sports fields are flooded. We notice if the toilets are locked or we can't get to one. So,
yeah, true, we do.
Yeah. Okay, civil defence, you guys have been working behind the scenes on a strategy. Are you ready to go to the public with it?
We are basically at that stage. And we've been working further with Scott on it. So, as you say,
that's a staff member.
Scott Bolt, who's the emergency officer, emergency liaison officer or something, within council. I've forgotten what his exact title is. But we've been working on him. He's ex-fire brigade, so he's ex-fence. So he's got quite a bit of knowledge around this area and that sort of thing. So we've put a draft document together that we now want to discuss with the interested parties in Raglan and people that have an interest in being part of a emergency response plan or team.
So how does that work from here?
So from here we will be going out to those interested parties saying, hey, there's a lot of people that have already rung us and said, hey, we would like to be involved.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So we're going out to them. It'll involve them, the police, and council, obviously, and sort of putting a structure, bit of a structure in place, looking at, you know, someone to sort of manage the whole process, then someone that would sit under that to look after logistics, housing, various sort of things, should a major emergency happen, have plans within those groups.
Yeah.
Council will also range training for those people. So if you're sort of, as to what is required and how you go about doing it, and things like that. So we will have designated people within designated roles as part of that emergency plan, who can respond, plus also identify a couple of places as sort of control centres that might have their own portable generator and be self-sufficient, so we have an emergency where we can set up as a base. People know where we are. Then look at how do we run the comms, who's involved in the comms. So, you know, obviously regular radio and people like this will become part of that team.
Yeah.
And that, so that there's effectively a plan there that at various layers sort of gets more and more detailed as it goes down.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So if someone... Sorry?
I was going to say, if someone is interested and they haven't got in touch yet, that's you still
happy? Yeah, sure, definitely. Yeah, definitely. The more that there is, the, you know, more information we get, the wider the knowledge is and more people we get out to. But we're probably sort of... I want our counsellor involved in it. She's taking a holiday shortly, so it'll be done probably... We're probably looking at 8 to 10 weeks out that we'll have that meeting.
Okay,
but we'll probably need that time to get organised anyway.
Yeah, plenty of time to do that. Okay, and we did mention... We were talking about the community facility strategy. There's also that connectivity strategy with trails and things. Is that... I don't feel like that's a very... It feels like a thing where people can say, I want a trail here, and they'll put it down on their list. And, of course, there's not enough money to do every trail. So what are your thoughts on this trail, this connectivity strategy?
Well, I think we've got to have a strategy. We're then going to have to prioritise where the trails are so that we get connectivity between, say, Greenslade Road and Lorenzen Bay and back to the wharf. So, you know, and there's also, there's already a trail been put in from Greenslade Road through Lorenzen Bay.
Yeah.
Then it's a matter of extending that, what sort of routes you would take to get back into town. Same going out to Wanneroo Reserve and that sort of thing. So some of them are already there and starting to happen, but it's how we get that connectivity back up to the mountain, for example. And, you know, as someone at the meeting we had when Matt talked to the community board about it about 3 meetings ago, it's the one at Te Uku, someone pointed out there used to be a trail from the upper Wainui Road that went up the mountain straight up that way that sort of disappeared. And it's one, those sorts of ones that are hiding in the back or sitting out there that used to be there we need to resurrect.
Okay.
But, yeah, we're going to have to prioritise them because obviously it's not funding to do all of them in the same year.
Yeah. Now, the last thing, I talked to you last time about erosion at Papahua where the as a result of the bridge change and it's eating away. It's going to be maybe getting to the road soon and start eating at that maybe in a couple of years, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's moving rapidly, so you wouldn't rule it out for certain. Is anyone doing anything yet?
There has been discussions. We had some discussions at the last Papahua or one previous Papahua camp meeting and that sort of thing about options there. There was talk about planting it, but there's some people think the planting will resolve the problem, but I think the problem's probably a little bit bigger than that myself, and I think some sort of retention or retaining along there might be required.
Did I show you the map of the shoreline from 1944?
Well, I have seen it where it's quite changed.
Which might be an indication of where it goes back to. Like the groin created by the old bridge allowed build up behind it. And that actually, it zigzags all over the place, but it does literally go through the road. So there's potential for that to get, you know, to start affecting infrastructure. So, okay. Whose responsibility is this? Is this a bit of a problem here? We don't know who's responsible, or is it definitely council?
It's interesting one from my experiences in working on the foreshore. It'll be a bit of, well, initially it'll be a regional council, I guess, but I also know Papahua Camping Camp Committee have got a bit of an interest in it as well, obviously, and I'm sure Ngāti Mahanga will have an interest in it as to what's happening and what we do there as well, because obviously it gets too close to that, you know, burial area adjacent to the boat ramp and things like that. So it's a multi-party thing that we're going to have to come up with a consensus plan. But as you say, it is getting worse, so it's something that we're going to have to face up to and do something about in the next sort of year or two.
Okay. And I know you're having a community board meeting at Tamata at some point. Did you have a date for that? Is that the next one or the one after? Or
no, I slipped up. I was meant to make a date. I had planned to get everyone to agree to a date, but we'll probably be looking at about October, I would say.
Okay.
Top of my head, but don't no promises, but we will definitely do one before Christmas.
Okay. All right, Dennis, thank you for coming in.
One thing I just want to have a plug just to remind people that have been involved in Raglan Surf Life Saving that we've got the 50th anniversary reunion coming up this year.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to register interest in that, they can go on to just Google Raglan Surf Life Saving 50th reunion.
Yeah.
And they should come up to the appropriate page and they can register their interest. So that's been running for 50 years, so that's going to be held on the 22nd of October at the club rooms during the day and at the Raglan Club in the evening.
We might have I might get someone for an interview about that, about the history of the club. You've been around for 50 years, Dennis. Have you been involved with the surf club for 50 years?
No.
No. We'll try. If you can find someone who knows the history, or maybe someone's going to do a bit of research, I don't know. But
yeah, Liz is writing a book on it.
Oh, your wife. Okay. Yeah. Oh, she's a perfect person. Yeah, well, we'll definitely have a chat with her about that then when we've got something to talk about.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Dennis. Hey, folks, we're going to be talking to Natalie about careers in just a moment. A little break first, though.